You are listening to the Health Hack Podcast, powered by Lumen and hosted by myself, Caroline Pierce. As an athlete, sports scientist, and sports presenter, I am passionate about health and how we can unlock the skills to hack our full potential. Each episode, I'll be joined by a leader in the health and well-being world to learn how they've come to understand their body and turned that knowledge into power that could help you too. Today's guest is an absolute genius when it comes to training and nutrition. He has the accolades to back it up. He is four times World MMA Trainer of the Year, number one best-selling author, and in the words of Sports Illustrated, the most sought-after coach in pro sports. He is Mike Dolce of The Dolce Diet. Mike, welcome to the show.
Carolyn, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
When I read through your biography, it also says, and two times girl dad. And I feel like that's sort of probably one of your most proudest achievements.
By far, that is the title I think that I aspire to embody in all things that I do, that makes me who I am. And I didn't know that 7 years ago before the birth of my first daughter. But now that literally it changed my career. Prior to having children, I was working with the UFC athletes. I mean, I could work with anyone I wanted, anytime I wanted, and almost charge whatever I wanted. And then when it was time to have children, I made a very present decision with my wife, Brandy, 21 years married now.
Congrats.
Right? I mean, how rare is that? We made the very deliberate decision that I wanted to be home with my children. I wanted to be a present father to raise my children. I knew I could, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or so, I could jump right back in and you know, do the job. But being a dad, but more specifically a girl dad, two-time girl dad.
Yeah.
That is my, it's just my greatest pleasure in life.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. And you've created this business that's online that I assume you can do from anywhere. And how we first met was through the UFC. I was reporting for the UFC and you very notably a strength and conditioning coach and a weight cut coach for the likes of Ronda Rousey, who I think a lot of people obviously have heard of. And then before that, your Randy Couture's and Dan Henderson and Chael Sonnen. But I want to just go back a little bit and ask, how did that all come about? You know, how did you sort of switch from, you know, this role as a strength and conditioning coach to working with pro athletes in that way?
You know, it's a great question. And it's a lifelong evolution, I think, you know, myself, my life. And I was always enamored with sports science. But when I started working as the head strength coach for Team Quest North in Portland, Oregon in 2004, they were the number one fight team on the planet. The only team close to us was Pat Miletich's Miletich Fighting System out in Iowa, right? But Quest, we had Randy Couture, we had Dan Henderson, we had Matt Lindland. Chael Sonnen was still coming up, right? He was still just kind of breaking into the pro ranks at that point. The world's greatest athletes came to us, and I was hired as their head strength coach. Now, there's a lot of great strength coaches in the world, and I was proud to be one of them. But I think what differentiated me, unbeknownst to myself, was my philosophy and approach to nutrition, in that we took a longevity-based approach to nutrition, which was very rare. And back in the early 2000s, mixed martial arts was all about bodybuilding nutrition. That's all there really was. The internet was still relatively new. There was no Instagram, no Twitter even back in those days, right?
How did we live? How did we survive? Hey.
Yeah, we had these things hanging on our walls called telephones with cords. It was crazy. But in that, the nutrition really took off and it changed the complexity of the gym. And then other athletes from around the world would come in and they would see what we were doing. And I think, you know, humbly myself and what separated what we were doing, how our athletes weren't suffering. They were able to eat all the way through competition, get leaner, get lighter, and still maintain strength and speed and athleticism. And the Dolce diet took off. And I was a meathead and in the gym meathead. I love that. I mean, look at me. I'm still that guy, right? But it was the nutrition that really differentiated what we were doing, and that allowed us to continue to grow the business as it is today.
You know, you not only work with pro athletes, I know that you work with, you know, your everyday people, the people that are listening here today, and the body transformations on your page and the, you know, the before and afters and the testimonials are just incredible. I mean, they really are the results that you've had. How would you sort of surmise what the Dolce diet principle or philosophy is, if it's sort of in a nutshell?
The Dolce diet is a longevity-based approach to rapid athletic and aesthetic performance. So we look at the long term. Every athlete we work with, let's say Ronda Rousey, the first conversation I have with Ronda is, my goal is not for you to win a world title, not for you to make weight for this competition. Really, my goal is, has nothing to do with mixed martial arts. My goal is for you to be 120 years old telling your great, great grandchildren about the time you won the world title, the time you made weight for this fight. So we always looked long-term. And when we focus on long-term longevity science, once again, the short-term decisions were very easy. It was easy for us to manage the human organism, the cellular organism that is we, that we humans are. And many people forget that. We never lost sight of that. So with that, we focus on the long-term health of the individual in front of us, and then we can cater whatever, you know, little ones and zeros that we need for the stated goal. 3 month, you know, 3 week, 3 month, 3 year goal. That's all easy, whether it's a powerlifting competition or a marathon. That's easy for us to just manage in that last little 10%. We call that the peaking phase.
You know, and I think so much of this, what you do with pro athletes, can be translated to the everyday person. There's a lot of similarities between the principles, right? So how does it translate? What principles of how pro athletes train and eat, aside from the weight cut, we don't want to encourage your everyday person to do drastic weight cuts.
Sure.
How much of that can translate and how much does?
It's 100%. And again, I'll use Ronda as the example. We brought her up earlier. When Ronda was getting ready to fight for the world title, we were working with her. I mean, we worked with Ronda for years through her title reign. Her grocery list was exactly the same as my grandma Rhoda, who was 89 years old. So Ronda was, you know, 29 grams, you know, of course, was 89. Their grocery list was exactly the same. Now, their portion size was a little bit different. Their meal frequency was slightly different. Ronda would be in the pool at 5 a.m. swimming hard laps, where Grams would be doing water aerobics with her friends at maybe 9:30 at the local community center. But they were still active. They were still athletic. They were still moving their body in a healthful manner relative to their ability and their goals. They were still eating high net nutrient, healthful whole foods in wide variety. They were not excluding vital micronutrients and macronutrient groups. They weren't worried about caloric restriction. We were more focused on fulfilling all the nutrient needs and then creating a deficit through healthy athletic expression. So it fits perfectly. And that's what I love about this system. And I think I just stumbled upon it, maybe the way Newton stumbled upon the law of gravity, right? He didn't invent it. I didn't invent this per se. I just stumbled upon the evergreen principles that work with every human. It just so happens it works with the world's greatest athletes as easily as it does with regular folks. Like, you know, you're an elite athlete yourself, but I'm not. I'm just a regular blue collar Joe who's had some pretty exceptional athletic events in my life while being rather average. It's because of, I think, my adherence to this healthy lifestyle that we preach.
I love this whole longevity idea because I think we're always caught up on whether you're getting in shape for your wedding, getting in shape for, you know, whatever short-term goal you might have. And of course, the short-term goals are important. We need those along the way. But the idea of longevity, especially I think with athletes as well, you how your body ends up many years down the line is not what you're thinking about in the short term. And you talk about yourself as being sort of a regular Joe. I know you were a very good athlete yourself, but you had your own body transformation, right? You lost, what was it, 100 pounds?
113 pounds. 113
pounds.
Yeah, from you know, I was a competitive power. I was a higher level amateur wrestler. I never made it to All American in college. I never went to the national tournament. You know, I was pretty. I never won, you know, a state title as a high school athlete. Right. I work with a young man, Anthony Knox, who just won his first high school state title as a freshman. Well, I could never win that as a senior, right? But I was always there in the room and I could always compete. And the same thing when I went into Team Quest. You know, I fought professionally. I had some really good wins and I always fought above my true talent in class. And I was a journeyman fighter who never aspired to be a fighter. I just fought because it was fun and because I could always make the weight. And you know, you don't get paid very well as a strength coach in MMA in 2004 and 5 and 6, right? So I could pick up $500 to fight in some strip club on stage, you know? It was crazy.
Why not?
Right? It's crazy. The Wild West in those days, you know? But going through that, and I think having the adherence to health and nutrition and fitness and living the lifestyle, it really allowed me to adapt. and blend. Like I could run, you know, 10 miles right now. I can triple body weight deadlift almost any day of the week, while again, not being a great athlete, not being genetically superior in any way. The only thing I was able to do is I maybe have a little bit more discipline than the average person, but that's been through decades of honing it. That's all. So over that, you know, 200 or the 110 pound weight loss, I brought my body weight up to 282 pounds as a competitive power lifter after my amateur wrestling career was over. I kept competing in a weight class oriented sport with a completely different performance parameter, right? Which is powerlifting as compared to wrestling. And then I hit a point that I was very unhealthy in my mid 20s. My blood pressure was through the roof. I had, you know, sleep apnea and a heart arrhythmia. I was very unhealthy. And I decided to make a drastic change in that I was following more of the sports performance model, counting the macros and progressive overload and doing all the things to get stronger, which I did, but I was very unhealthy. And I made that decision on that one specific day that never again would I abuse my body like this. I would really care for my body. And I focused on the long term. And that's where really the Dolce diet principles became firmly rooted. And from that day forward, I think I've been healthier every single day since that day. And that's what I continue to do. So I competed at 170 pounds as a welterweight, you know, in the UFC or the Ultimate Fighter. I was on that TV show and the IFL. I set the record for the fastest knockout in that organization once upon a time. Now I just live a very healthy, normal life as, you know, a 200 or so pound girl dad.
I love that last part. What comes across to me is the discipline. And I think as well within your methods is this no nonsense approach. And, you know, I've seen some of the statements and advice that you put out. And I wanted to touch on a few of them. And one being like, I saw you wrote, don't eat the cookie. Okay. There's a lot of trainers now that with this whole, you know, be kind to yourself, you know, you can have the cookie, you can do this, it's okay. And you turn around and you said, no, don't eat the cookie. You know, do you think there is, or can we live in a world where you can eat your cookie, have your cookie and eat your cookie? Is that possible?
No, as fitness trainers, the answer is no, categorically no. And all the trainers who say that they're pandering to the lowest common denominator for likes, it's a marketing ploy that they're using to try and you know, separate their community from their money. And I see it very specifically. I work in the fitness industry. Now, it's better for me to say, oh, eat the cookie, it's okay, go have a drink or two, don't worry. That's easy. I will have a much bigger funnel, a much bigger audience. I'll be able to monetize those individuals, but I will not be telling them the truth. In order to be something different than you currently are, you must do different things. You must make specific changes. And if you do not make those changes, you will never change yourself. I work with thousands of humans personally every single year, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people over the course of the last, you know, handful of years or so with what we do. What I say is 100% true. And I have walked the journey as a 282 pound man who lost 113 pounds. If I was allowing myself to eat the cookie, have the occasional beer with friends, I never would have got where I am today. I never would be as healthy. I never would have made those changes. So when I speak from a point of experience and also authority. When we say, go ahead, eat the cookie, how many people will eat one cookie? None. Because they'll have a cookie and then they'll have maybe another cookie and they'll say, well, I ate the cookie, I should have this again. And, well, yeah, I kind of already
domino effect.
The domino effect, yeah. But it becomes a habit that they are a cookie eater. They'll have a cookie on a Tuesday and maybe on a Thursday and again on a Saturday. And, well, it's brunch with friends on Sunday. And these, it's death by a thousand cuts. Slowly but surely, instead of saying, no, I'm setting a goal for myself, I will lose 30 pounds by June 1st. Come hell or high water, I will do everything in my power to be successful. That is the person who eventually can have a cookie and not have any deleterious effect from that. Like myself, I can eat a cookie anytime I want. I choose not to because I understand the poison that is inside of the cookie. It is a hyperpalatable food. And just as a brief aside for those listening, a little, you know, education share, hyperpalatable foods are chemically created to induce further consumption. So these are cookies, these are crisps, these are chips, these are cakes. It is a specific ratio of sodium to fat to sugar. These are very specifically calculated.
Taste very good.
They're very good. And we hear the term, once you pop, you just can't stop. you can't eat just one. That is the marketers literally rubbing it in our faces, knowing that one taste of a hyperpalatable food will increase total caloric consumption by 160%. Now, we all say, oh, that doesn't sound true. And I say, oh, yeah? When you eat one potato chip, what do you tend to eat over the next 2 to 3 hours?
More potato
instead
chips.
Of if you just had one apple at that same sitting.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I have people say to me, because I'm very similar to yourself. I'm very disciplined with the way that I eat. Probably not quite as much as I used to be when I was competing. But I'll have people say to me, just have a bite. If there's a cake or a cookie, just have a bite. And I'll say no, because that bite has a knock-on effect that I crave more. And I can't stop. So I'd rather save that bite for when I've decided that I want that cookie, you know, very occasionally, or that brunch or whatever it is, which I do indulge in occasionally. But to just have that bite willy-nilly without any sort of planning behind it, for me, is that roller coaster or that domino effect in terms of overeating. So these are hyperpalatable foods that you're talking about.
Yes.
How do we avoid that trap?
Well, we avoid that trap, number one, is through, well, I could take it a couple different ways, so I'll make it easy, is setting a goal. Let's set a goal. I always have a goal in front of myself. I will not compete. I have no competitions. I have no trophies waiting for me in the future. I'm not signed up for anything in particular, but I do set quarterly goals for myself that have very specific outcomes. I will weigh 202 pounds at 8% body fat by May 1st. I set that goal January 1st. That gives me January, February, March, April, and then May 1st, 4 solid months to work my tail off to achieve that. Well, that's hard work. That's challenging. That keeps me clear of mind. It keeps me focused and it allows me to avoid some of those gray areas.
A word that comes to mind is accountability, knowledge, having the information and the knowledge, but also accountability for our choices. Because a lot of people will say, well, I don't have time. I travel. I've got kids. All these different things that mean that those highly, you know, like hyperpalatable foods, at a grab at the gas station or wherever it might be. So it's obviously planning and knowledge, but that accountability, how do you install in yourself, or you obviously have it innately, or you've trained it for so many years in yourself, but in your clients, how do you install or ensure that you get that accountability from your clients?
We have to be mindful. We have to be mindful of the decisions that we are making. We have to be intentional with those decisions, knowing the outcomes. And then we have to be accountable for the only person responsible for what those outcomes are. So when my buddies say, hey, Mike, we haven't seen you in a while. We're in town. Let's go grab some beer and pizza. I say, sure, I'm happy to meet up with you and hang out and have some fun. Let's go to the fish house down the street that I know that I can order just a beautiful fresh fish right out of the ocean. I can have a great meal, hang out with you guys, instead of going to Buffalo Wild Wings, let's say, where there's really nothing for me to order.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat my meal before I go, and I'm going to just sip on water with lemon. I have no problem with that. And my friends will, quote, make fun of me. I'm the first one with my shirt off at the beach. And they're the ones hiding in the shade. No disrespect. I have no problem climbing a mountain or trekking through the desert, where they, on the other hand, they got to bring their CPAP machines with them.
It's planning, isn't it? It's planning circumstances, social engagements that are conducive to making the right choices. Yeah, I think that's important. Another way we can keep ourselves accountable are a lot of the tracking devices we have nowadays. Yes. You know, so we take the guesswork out of it. I have a tracking device that tells me how I'm sleeping. It tells me the calories I'm burning, the steps that I've taken, my heart rate. I mean, Lumen as well. And we've got one coming your way, Mike, as well. The Lumen device, the sponsor of our podcast. Lumen is so cutting edge when it comes to monitoring what we're metabolizing. You wake up in the morning, you use your breath to blow into this, and it will tell you whether you're in a fat burning or predominant carbohydrate burning state. That informs, well, what did I eat last night before I went to bed? How is that beneficial to me and my training now? Is my training getting me in the fat burning zone? I mean, what do you think of this philosophy, this idea that using our breath, we get all this information to inform the decisions we make? We're not just guessing and thinking that we've maybe done enough or eaten the right things.
I love it. The advent of technology, especially today, really eliminates many of the excuses most people have. So having something like Lumen as an additional co-pilot, let's say, or a coach even, if you will, to keep you accountable. And that's kind of touches what I had said is mindfulness, intentionality, and accountability. Now the Lumen can actually help with this, help keep you on track. And there's the old saying, if you can measure it, you can improve it. I mean, we're a team of scientists over here, very much like yourself. You must be. We just swim through the data. We love the data. So the more data, the better. And it really helps you understand where you are in the journey. So having something like Lumen, letting you know what, you know, your past, you know, meals have done, what your current state is, allows you very, you know, allows you to be very focused on what the next thing you need to be doing today to right the ship, to make sure that you are on track and moving forward. So I'm excited to get it.
Yeah, I can't wait if you try it out as well. And, you know, talking about metabolism, because Lumen's a metabolism tracking device, and the idea being that we try and achieve metabolic flexibility. And that word gets sort of thrown around quite a bit. But for a lot of people, what does that mean? You know, how would you describe metabolic flexibility, and how do we achieve that?
The average person just focused on living a healthful lifestyle, because there's so many keywords now. And this is what the fitness marketers are so good at. And there's a difference between fitness marketers and fitness experts. It's very hard to tell the difference, though, unless you're on the inside. Now, fitness marketers, they will love to grab onto the next keyword and hashtag, and they will chase you around with Facebook pixels and Google AdWords. And in a very short period of time, they will have you believe that the ketogenic diet is the best diet, which is nearly gone now, right? 3 years, turn and burn, and it's done. Carnivore, vegan, fitting macros, the same thing. I mean, I just named 12 years worth of cyclical fad diet cycles. We need to wipe all that away, and we just need to get back to high net nutrient, healthful whole foods and moving your body in an athletic manner that you enjoy, that is slightly challenging. If the average person simply focuses, and very simply, we call the 4x4, four meals about 4 hours apart, four times per day. That can be breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, you know, breakfast, tea, supper, dinner, whatever, wherever you're from. It's all the same basic thing. Four meals about the same size, about the same, you know, calorie macronutrient breakdown spread evenly throughout the day of high net nutrient, healthful whole foods, devoid of synthetic toxic chemicals and all the man-made processing, which, you know, just increases the margins, the profit margins for the companies. If the average person just ate like that and lived like that and moved their body for 30 minutes a day, going for a walk, playing Frisbee, walking the dog is a little iffy because most people's dogs walk super slow.
Sniffing. Stop to pee at every post, yeah.
Exactly. And that's activity. And that's what we call neat. But that's not quite, you know, dedicated exercise. Just 30 minutes a day and let it scale into a 45 or 60 minutes once or twice a week. That's all the average person has to do. It's not complicated. And you know, the metabolic flexibility, I understand that, and I'm not dismissing it, but the average person will chase that, these terms that are put into the media, and they will lose track of what actually works.
Yeah. So you'll get that anyway by doing these simple things. It doesn't have to be complicated, does it? I just think because of all these things thrown around, we get very confused. You know, I question myself sometimes, some principles and the way things have changed over time, you know, and one thing I've seen you say as well is the key to getting shredded is not cutting calories. And that's sort of like touching on another sort of theory that was thrown around a lot in the past that, you know, calories in, calories out. Of course, that's basic science. But this idea that we've got to keep cutting the calories down, well, that's going to screw our metabolism anyway in the long term. So expand on that a little bit, that the key to getting shredded is not cutting calories.
No, the key is not cutting calories, because simply cutting calories, what is a calorie? A calorie is a unit of energy, right? If the energy is not expended, then the energy will be stored. Okay, we understand that. But if we cut calories, we're also cutting the vital micronutrients and phytochemicals that are necessary for cellular health. And remember, you and I, all humans, we are cellular organisms. Now, each one of those cells has a very specific job. And to do those jobs, they need very specific raw materials. Those are the micronutrients and the phytochemicals. The further we lower those calories, the less raw materials are being delivered to the job site. Therefore, cellular dysfunction begins. Once there is cellular dysfunction, who knows what the problems will become, how they will manifest, but they will manifest in a breakdown of lean, healthy, functional muscle tissue, and they will manifest in an increase of energy storage components, which is stored body fat. If you cut too many calories, you will actually lose muscle tissue, which we want, and you will gain body fat by percentage. What we focus on is we focus on maintaining a high level of high net nutrient food intake, right? And then we increase our expenditure through healthy athletic activities in order to create what that surplus would be. So now we're not creating a raw material deficiency. We're actually able to utilize some of that some of those energy components through the extra activity. And what the great thing is, we can actually perform specific athletic activities that are in line with our goals. Maybe I want to bodybuild and sculpt my shoulder, or the ladies want to just, you know, kind of, you know, tighten up the lower body, let's say, or maybe I do want to run a marathon or be in a powerlifting competition. I can train specifically for that with that surplus of energy units, and I can increase a deficit as a result of the expenditure, which gives me the body composition I'm looking for. So we use the term, whether we get our athletes ready for competition the way in, we actually feed them to the scale. We're able to increase their total caloric intake over the last 3 weeks as they get ready, because their activity is going up. As their energy output goes up, so must their energy intake. And we're always mindful, once again, to the longevity side of our company, is the fulfilling the micronutrient and the phytochemical needs.
It makes complete sense. I want to ask as well about sort of female considerations. So I know you touched on before, like your grandma and Ronda Rousey are on the same principles, you know, and men and women, it's very similar. But I know with females especially, because oftentimes not quite as concerned with the muscle bulk and the muscle size, obviously more so now with getting the booty and the thighs and all the rest of it becoming, you know, what more desirable in many cases. But for a lot of women, you see more of that just cutting the calories down more and more. And those women that are then going crazy with the cardio and et cetera, you know, it brings about the whole female athlete triad consideration of a woman that's absolutely killing it in her gym, but not feeding and fueling herself, and all the problems that come with that. So are there additional or certain circumstances or situations that women have to be a little bit mindful within that respect?
In general, we may say yes, but specifically, no. You know, we work with, you know, many females, many males, and we focus on the individual as an individual. Where I might work with a man who has a rather slow and sluggish metabolism and a young lady who's just darn near ripped all the time, or vice versa, right? So there's an individual propensity that we really focus on. In general, we overlay the principles we discuss, let's say the 4x4, the high net nutrient whole foods, 30 to 60 minutes of healthful activity, athletic activity. And we'll actually watch for a month, for a good 4 weeks. We call it the health and habit phase in our system. 4 weeks, let's eat these basic meals. Let's exercise this basic style. Let's stay consistent. Let's eliminate the variables, and let's see the way your body responds. Now, is there any previous diagnosis? Are you on any prescription medicines? And, you know, we do blood panel reviews and things such as that. But in general, we actually watch what we will see, regardless of gender, regardless of goal sets, regardless of culture. Almost every person within those 4 weeks of just developing these healthy habits has a dramatically positive swing forward, where we get to dial in their body almost like, you don't even need me. What we want to do, and my job is as a coach, I'm an educator. Right. I don't tell anybody what to do. I explain to them why I believe they should look into certain things to do. So it's a different way. I want to really give context here. But with the ladies, you know, even with mixed martial artists, you know, this might be slightly as an aside. A lot of ladies in mixed martial arts, let's say if they miss weight, they blame what we call lady time. I've worked with some of the greatest women in all of combat sports. We've never missed weight because of lady time. We understand. That is one of the variables that is unique to this one single individual. And then we bake that into the cake. We plan for that. That is no different, let's say, than I've had an athlete who was in a severe car accident with his family 2 days before competition. Well, I could make a very strong argument that that male athlete has even more severe and dire consequences that would have contributed to a weight loss miss than just a known 28-day cycle with a 3-pound increase in relative water weight. It's the individual. Once we focus on the individual, what your personalities, what your variabilities are, what your physiology is, if you step back for a good 4 weeks, and here's the problem, most people will not wait 4 weeks before they jump onto a keto and then jump off in a week or two and say it failed.
We want instant gratification and results from everything we're doing. Yeah.
That's it. And that's unfortunate. Where we say you will feel, like on our program, you will feel instant gratification from meal one by the way it digests. And it gives you energy. And it just makes you feel good. Like, we don't even ask you what you weigh until like question 7 or 9. I don't even want to know what you weigh until like week 3 or 4. How do you feel? How's your digestion? How you doing at work? What's your home life like?
No, they're all factors that are the individual to us and what determines our success. And I love that you said, you know, that let's go back to that meal one or that first thing that you do. It's all about forming habits. And I've heard you talk about your morning routine and the importance of a morning routine. And I think the order of it was, you know, wake up. You tell me, there was sort of the five things that you do in the morning before sunrise.
Wake up. Now, I go to bed relatively early at this stage of life because I am at my best. I feel my best. I look my best. I live my best. When I go to bed, typically in the nines, 9, 9:15, by 9:30, I'm pretty much in bed or even asleep by 9:30 at night. I naturally wake up. I haven't set an alarm clock in years. I naturally wake up around sunrise. That is my chronobiology. I am very much in tune with the world around me, as all humans should be, but we pull ourselves off that natural clock because we force ourselves through devices and through cultural norms to revolt against what is in our best interest. I do embrace that, and I certainly teach that. So I typically wake up, let's say around 5, 5:15, like ready. I wake up, bing, I'm ready to get up. I do not want to be in bed. I do not want to hit the alarm clock. Like, I'm full of energy when I wake up. Feet hit the floor, walk out the door, use the restroom, and hydrate. Hydration is first. Room temperature water, 16 to 32 ounces or so. Typically, I'll get the coffee going, a little bit of a espresso or something like that, a little black coffee. I'll get a little bit of the caffeine in my system, which I do enjoy. It has certain cognitive benefits, thermogenic benefits, mood elevating benefits, right? Not too much, just enough. And then I'll typically go for a walk. Now, that walk is a fasted walk, if you will. And our determination of fasted is the absence of insulin, right? I do not want to have circulating insulin when I go for that first walk, because this is the only time of day I will be relatively insulin free. From the time you eat thereafter, there will be some form of insulin circulating through your body. Go for a walk. I don't care about how many calories I burn. This is more a psychological and an emotional awakening for me each day, to get my body moving, to get my blood flowing, to get my heart pumping, to get my brain operating. I work through all the problems in my life during those 30 or 45 minutes of walking. And I have an amazing, amazing fat burning benefit to that fasted aerobic activity because of the interplay of the alpha and beta receptors inside the fat cell being more efficient at releasing that stored energy in the absence of insulin. Once again, I'm going to train later in a semi-fed or a fully fed state, maybe even go for another walk after dinner or later on in the day, where I will have circulating insulin and I'll burn the same amount of calories, but it's not calories in, calories out. And some of the SECO advocates will argue that fasted or fed doesn't matter. They don't understand biochemistry, nor do they care about cultivating the emotional and the psychological well-being of the human. Now, from there, so you come home from the walk, come back. Typically, that's like shower time, get my first meal going, which is usually the breakfast bowl, which I mentioned to yourself and Catherine earlier. And that is oats, it is nuts, it is seeds, it is fresh fruit, maybe a little raw local honey, cinnamon, coconut.
Sounds good.
Delicious, right? And people say, oh, you're going to get fat. I'm like, dude, I'm in better shape than all of you. For a longer period of time, I'm probably stronger pound for pound. I'm not like a humble brag, but I can do all the athletic things that everybody else can do at a pretty damn high level. I'm probably not going to win every foot race or every barbell competition, but I'm going to compete really respectfully in everything. And I can run, I can jump, I can skip, I can crawl, like I can swim, I can do all this stuff.
You're fueling yourself right from the off.
This is the crazy thing about people listening. They're like, oh, I thought carbs were bad. You eat fruit. We eat fruit 4 times a day. When we're cutting weight for UFC competition, that's impossible. Many of these low carbers will say, no, we do that on the world-class stage on pay-per-view for millions, tens of millions of dollars, like every week. And we crush it with a 100% success ratio. So it just goes to show you how much nonsense is pushed by the fitness marketers out there when fitness experts like you or like I, we live contrary to what they say. And I know you eat a very well-rounded meal plan.
I don't cut my carbs. No, I eat my fruit as well. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. You know, one thing that stood out to me, what you said in that order of your morning was, you know, you hydrate before you caffeinate. And I think that's worth pointing out as well, because how many people go straight for the coffee machine? The espresso or the milky luxury Starbucks coffee or whatever it might be. So I like that. It's important we hydrate the body before we caffeinate. There are the benefits to caffeine, like you said. You know, you pointed out, you know, the benefits that it brings us. Can we have too much of a good thing?
Absolutely.
Getting us jittery and affecting our adrenal glands and so forth?
Absolutely can. And I actually own a coffee company.
So nice.
I produce and sell coffee. We're small. We're a specialty coffee company. We're not trying to sell, you know, a lot. The worst salesman in the world. I'm like, you probably should only have maybe 1 to 3 cups per day on average. Just a little bit, just enough. And when I make a cup of coffee, I make a half a cup. So that's really all I need. I don't need a full cup.
Just the taste, just that little bit of pick me up. Caffeine as well. You know, you're talking about what time you wake up. And I know we have the Mark Wahlbergs of the world and the Rocks, the Dwayne Johnson and the 2 a.m. club, 3 a.m. club and whatever. But I feel like the more and more experts we listen to, the narrative of waking up early just seems to be what all successful people seem to do. So sort of coming back to caffeine and to sleep, we don't want to caffeinate too late, obviously, to affect our abilities to sleep. But sleep itself, how much sleep should we be getting? Because you hear 8 hours all the time. My average is probably around 7 hours. And sometimes if I have too much, I feel groggy.
Yeah.
You know, and some people say that. So how do you know for you individually what's the right amount of sleep?
Great point and great question. Now, if we lean on the science, the vast majority of science will point to 7.5 hours being the optimal minimum. Anything less than 7.5 hours, we're not quite getting the full benefits of multiple sleep cycles, right? You know, body typically sleeps in these 90-minute waves. We need at least 5 of those waves to fully repair, fully recover, fully rebuild, and prepare ourselves for the next healthy day. Now, there's a saying that I've seen multiple times. Now, I've created my own saying out of the science that sleeping less than 6 hours is as if you had not slept at all, right? Simply because you have done none of the repair. It's like your car has squeaky brakes. You bring it into the shop. It's a 2-hour job, but you take it 45 minutes away from the mechanic 45 minutes later. The mechanic's like, hey, like, I only put one pad on. You're like, that's all right. It'll get me where I'm going next. I'm in a rush. The human body is very similar. When you go to bed, you are actually putting the car into the shop. You need at least 7.5 hours. What we teach is to go to bed 9 hours before you are scheduled to wake up. This allows you, we say, a little bit of hanky-panky time or scrolling the gram or whatever you're going to do in the world in bed. You get there 9 hours before. Well, this darn near guarantees you will get 8 hours of sleep. 7 hours at minimum. And then ideally, it's a little bit different. Some people say, oh man, I sleep 5 hours a night. I'm great. No, you're not. You just don't know what it is to be optimal.
You've learned to operate on that level. Yeah.
It's like the McDonald's eaters and you know, the hot dog chewers. Like, they think they feel fine because they've been eating McDonald's for the last 5 years. No. You don't feel fine. You are suboptimal. Yeah. It's like collegiate wrestlers. We work with many of the Division I teams and individual athletes. We say it is a gentleman's agreement between these two athletes that when they shake hands, they are agreeing to compete at 60%. That's the agreement because they've destroyed their bodies. They've underfed. They've suffered. They've worked so hard. They're not 100%. It's like MMA athletes. 3 weeks out, they're about their best. And from that point, their body just falls apart. Same thing again with sleep. So we say count with the time you have to wake up in order to have the perfect morning with time to do everything. And then plan your bedtime 9 hours before that wake-up time is. Watch how different your day is to wake up without an alarm clock. You're like Snow White, just like with the birds chirping and like the sun just starting to crack through the window shade.
Yeah, I think I've got close to that, but I do need my alarm sometimes. And you know what, Mike, I'd love us to talk more and more. I have like a gazillion other questions for you. There's been so much useful information, but I have to wrap it up here. And I just want to thank you because the depth of what you've talked to us about is on another level to the sort of surface level information we get online and that, you know, we scroll through and so forth. It's so, so useful. And just to say before you go, you know, what's next for you? And also where can people find you so they can learn more about what you've been talking about?
I appreciate it. Well, anyone can go to thedolcediet.com to find us. We have personalized 4-week and 12-week online programs created by myself, our team of registered dietitians and exercise physiologists. We're extremely proud of this program. We're always updating it. We completely guarantee it. It's me. It's my name. It's my brand that's on it. Also, we now just launched a new online coaching program where you can actually chat with me, work with me one-on-one for 30-day blocks of time as much as you want to, where I answer every question via text message, video message, phone calls. People send me videos of themselves in the gym. They can't get past a sticking point, or they're just having some problem with support system maybe at home. They need someone to be their friend and walk the journey with them. That's all at thedolcediet.com. What's next for me is just trying to spread the word and help people. I'm at this phase in my life and career that I really want to give back. I want to open source everything I know, everything I do. I just want to touch as many humans as I can and wipe away all the false marketing that has been holding them back. I know obesity is the highest rate it's ever been. Diabetes is the highest rate it's ever been in adults and in children. Our life expectancy is now starting to trend downwards. Well, this is all related to personal lifestyle. And this is very easy to fix, but it's confusing because of the power of marketing. And hopefully, you know, voices like yourself, Caroline, and hopefully, you know, my little, you know, pebble, you know, in the vast, you know, river here can cause some sort of ripple to help one person at a time. Is really all I'm trying to do. And I just want people to live better longer. That's our new motto. It's just live better longer. Whatever I can do to help you, them, anyone who's listening, that's what I'm here to do.
Well, absolutely love it. And you do help so many people and many more, I'm sure, who are listening here and that follow you. So, Mike, thank you so much for joining us on the Health Hack Podcast. Look forward to talking to you soon.
A pleasure.
And thank you for listening to the Health Hack Podcast with myself, Caroline Pierce. Each episode provides a healthy dose of health hacking. So make sure to hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out. I would be truly grateful if you could rate and review wherever you're listening to help others seeking inspiring stories and health hacks to find us. The Health Hack is an Insanity Podcast production and powered by Lumen. See you next time.